Yeah, that's what I want. I want Google having all my mail.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, July 11th, 2009. Time again for your Gitmo Nation audio publication, episode 111.
This is No Agenda.
Coming to you from the 17th century Amsterdam Canal House Crackpot Command Center in the heart of Gitmo Nation East, where the door-to-door house searches have already begun. I'm Adam Curry.
And, well, so, sorry for the delay on that, but I'm here in Northern Silicon Valley as usual. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
As sharp as ever, John. As
you caught me off guard. You're going on about the house.
Oh, but it's really happening.
Searches.
It's true.
And I'm thinking, I'm going. I was thinking to myself, really? That's interesting. I haven't heard anything about that.
Oh, dude,
I just completely forgot the cue.
It's so cool to be here in Gitmo Nation East because so many interesting things are taking place. While you're doing your background searches, because I know you're working on something, in The Hague, which is where the government sits in the Netherlands.
Which is also where Miniature Land is.
Maduro Dam.
Yeah.
Door-to-door house searches are now being performed. I've gotten so many emails about this that I'm so happy I can share this with you. I have the actual documents, scans of it. You'll see that in the show notes at noagenda.mevo.com. Reading from a translation page, it appears that routine searches of one's home to check for a vast array of, quote, problems are now being performed.
Were they looking for mold?
Now being performed door to door in the Netherlands. The city of The Hague is inspecting all homes in a number of neighborhoods. One resident that apparently told these people to bugger off on a previous occasion got a threatening letter. And this is the letter that you can see the Dutch version. Translation, I'll just read a bit of it. Stop me when you're already peeing your pants. Subject, inspection regarding occupancy relating to The Hague Residence Brigade. In The Hague, we want... This is the actual translation of the actual document. In The Hague... We want pleasant and safe neighborhoods. For this reason, we are inspecting all homes in your neighborhood. For each address, we will see if the rules and regulations are being met. In the residence you own at, redacted, was visited by our team on the 10th of June 2009, but we were refused entrance. On Thursday, the 25th of June, between 1300 and 1400 hours, your residence will be visited again by a team of the Hague Residence Brigade, led by the sitting planning office. We will verify the state of the building, fire safety, and the actual use of the residence. All rooms of the residence are subject to this inspection. The cooperation of all residents is therefore a necessity. We'd like to point out that this is not a voluntary inspection. You are obliged to cooperate. If you refuse to cooperate, we'd like to point out that we are legally entitled to enter the premises with a legal warrant and without the cooperation of the owner and or occupants. Oh, John, it's happening. Well, it is happening.
They're just trying. They're just looking for a hidden church.
No, they're looking for marijuana groweries. They're looking for illegal immigrants. The tax authorities, the local energy company. Dude, it's really happening over here.
Sounds great.
Yeah, yippee. Yippee-ki-yay.
Well, we haven't gotten that far here yet. Although, one of the clips I didn't send over today was the... I have the hearing that was done, U.S. Senate hearing... at the kangaroo courts about the climate change bill, and one of the senators brought up the fact that some woman who had brought up the EPA is a problem.
There's a ringtone for you
when you look at it. And it's Lisa Jackson that runs it.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at her and you go, my God, this is the most smug creep that has ever been put in a public office at that level.
So hold on. So the climate change bill, is this the cap and trade, or is that a part of it?
Yeah, it's okay. All part. This is the cap and trade.
Right. Okay.
Or as Horowitz calls it, crap and trade.
Good one.
So anyway, She is so smug that it's really, it makes you itch just to watch her. I mean, she's horrible, and she's obviously, you know, going to be the I mean, if you look at the way the bills are written, she's going to run the country basically.
And she's the head of the EPA.
Yeah. Oh, she. And I don't understand. I didn't look into her background. We'll probably follow up on this, but she can't. I don't know where she came from or how she got appointed. Maybe I should look it up right as we're doing the show. But anyway, I got a couple of clips. And one of them involves her, which you might want to play if we want to get right into climate change right now.
So, well, there is a lot going on with climate change. The G8 is currently meeting, and there are full-page ads everywhere, including the Financial Times. Really, full-page ads, you know, brought to you by, paid for by people like businessforclimatechange.org, We Are Climate Change, climatechangemybutt.org. You know, these are $100,000 ads that are being taken out, and it's a very obvious campaign. So there is a lot happening right now about climate change. The EPA, of course, stands for Environmental Protection Agency, and we'll listen to this Lisa Jackson woman now.
There was a
boy. She has a deep voice, John.
An article in the Washington Post yesterday, deconstructing the climate bill.
John Barrasso of
questions
Wyoming.
And answers.
I'm sorry?
Yes, John Barrasso of Wyoming asking her a question about this Washington Post article that came out that just ripped the climate change bill.
Barrasso isn't by any chance related to Barrasso, the European president, is he?
Let's hope not.
here we go.
So on the mammoth House measure, the climate bill approved by the House last month started out as an idea, fight global warming, and wound up looking like an unabridged dictionary. And Senator Bond, I think, had the big copy of that unabridged dictionary. It runs to more than 1,400 pages, swollen with loopholes and giveaways meant to win over ungreen industries and wary legislators. And then they go through a number of questions. And it said, would this bill stop climate change? Would this bill stop climate change? And their answer is no, it would not. Do you agree with the Washington Post's assessment that this bill will not stop climate change, or do you disagree with the Washington Post on this?
I did happen to see that article, Senator, and I agree with their assessment that this bill is the right start and that it sends a strong signal, and that you all in the Senate have work to do, and I respect the fact that you're starting that work.
So you're
wait a minute, what?
Can I have a yes and no answer, please?
I agree with their assessment that it's a great start. Y'all in the Senate, you got some work to do, y'all.
My impression is that this bill, as we are looking at right now, will not impact on climate change. You agree with the article, you said?
Well, we already had a discussion earlier about the fact that what the United States does is important in terms of entering the clean energy race, in terms of reducing our dependence on oil that comes from outside of our country, and in terms of creating millions of jobs. So this is a jobs bill, it's an energy bill, and it's also a climate change bill, and we will need to work internationally to affect changes on global climate change.
It's the global climate change race, John. We're in a race.
Race.
Hey, Canada, you're fucked. You're fucked. Canada giving us all that oil. Bye. You're screwed.
So she wouldn't answer the question, obviously, but she'd use a lot of bureaucraties.
She's great at that. I mean, that's beautiful spin. I'm impressed.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but it was like, you know, but she's so smug. You have to look at it. You have to see her visually to see this kind of like droopy-eyed, you know, screw you look.
How old is she? Is she hot?
She's kind of a big woman.
Hold on. Oh, that could be hot. Hold on. Let me Google her.
To you.
Lisa Jackson. Okay, let's see. Come on, Google. Do your stuff. Oh, I see. She's got kind of... Well, if you Google Lisa Jackson, you get some hot babes, but then there's, okay, I see her. She got kind of like a Liza Minnelli haircut.
Yeah, she does. That's what, it's like she goes to the obviously goes to the beauty parlor before she does anything.
And look at her makeup. She's got full-on TV makeup on.
Full-on. Little heavy-handed with the makeup.
Yeah.
She looks a little too...
It looks like she had Botox only on one side of her head. She should have done the other side of the forehead.
Somebody slapped her upside the head there.
She got some ugly stick whooping.
but anyway, she's annoying to say the least. She's just a stooge. And anyway, the whole thing, but there's another clip there.
Yep. They want to set it up?
No, well, there's an undercurrent during these hearings. It kept cropping up. And I just, this is just a very short clip. I just want to indicate that this is a Democrat that's speaking. The guy from Delaware, I think, is Carper or Corper or something like that. I can't remember who it is. But anyway, just play that little clip.
Oh, that's the cue. Sorry.
Yeah. Senator Carper's next.
Yeah, thanks very much. So, Dr. Chu, a number of our Republican colleagues on this committee and a number of Republican colleagues in the Senate are...
Blame the Republicans, but he's for it.
Okay.
Republican colleagues in the Senate are very enthusiastic about nuclear energy. They see there's no end to how much we could accomplish with it. I'm a strong advocate of expanding nuclear power as well. One of the things I'd urge you to do, I'll be real honest with you, they're looking for somebody in the administration who's is excited.
I just want to point out that every so often one of these guys comes on and they go crazy over
nuclear.
He goes crazy over nuclear, and
I'm not against it, by the way, nuclear.
By the way, the guy who's the head of the Department of Energy is an Asian who won a Nobel Prize or something. I can't remember his name's Chu or something like that.
And Jimmy
Chu. And he is like, yeah, no, I think it's great. You know, and so he's like pro nuke and all these people. Then there's during all these hearings, there's a lot of discussion of like, there's kind of a meme that showed up, you know, reboot. We want to reboot our
relationship. Oh, yeah, this is the whole thing that is reset, I think it is, isn't it? Because that's what they're talking
it
about.
It goes back and forth from reset
Russia.
To reboot, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Obama wanted, to reset relationships.
No, he wanted
Russia.
To reboot, I think. Wasn't
it
reboot?
I think it was reset.
Okay, well, it's now that ruins the meme. Whatever the case is, they want to reset this and reset that. Now they want to restart... the nuke business with new plants all over the place because one guy after another, these Republicans have this angle. It's like, well, heck, if we're going to do this, let's just go with, you know, and I, by the way, which is, it kind of explains how General Electric, which owns NBC and MSNBC,
yeah,
is so pro all this stuff.
Well, this is interesting because
General Electric, by the way, is the big power, the big nuclear power plant company.
Well, they also delivered the $2 billion worth of wind turbines to T. Boone Pickens, who has just said, I'm calling it off. Good idea, but I'm not going to do it. His wind farm, his 687 giant wind turbine wind farm.
Yeah.
He's called it off.
What's going on there?
Well, it's an AP story. Plans for the world's largest wind farm in the Texas panhandle have been scrapped, energy baron T. Boone Pickens said Tuesday. And he's looking for a home for the 687 giant wind turbines. So I have a...
Where was he?
Yeah.
Well, where was he going to put them in the first place?
He says he had leases on about 200,000 acres in Texas that were planned for the project. He might place some of the turbines there, but he's also looking for smaller wind projects to participate in. He's looking at potential sites in the Midwest and Canada. But essentially, he's saying he's calling the whole thing off, and there's no real explanation other than perhaps General Electric said, hey, dude, you invested $2 billion in this shit. You know what? We'll cut you some slack. You know, we'll give you a credit. If you give up the project, so maybe they can go nuclear. I'm just thinking out loud.
There's something up. Yeah, well, it'll shake out shortly. I mean, he can move all those, if he wants to find more wind. I mean, if he just moves them all to North Dakota, he's got it made. I mean, that's where the money is for wind.
Meanwhile, very interesting watching some of the news coverage of Obama in Russia. It's interesting to see that General Electric, Pepsi, and Boeing all now have moved into Russia as a part of this reset, reboot, restart of relationships, while companies like IKEA and other investors, British Petroleum, literally have been kicked out, you know, their money taken away, stolen, overtaxed, all kinds of weird shit going on. So I guess if you're not within the coalition, if you're not playing ball... Then you get screwed. And I love this. I think you got this on email as well. Gazprom just to stay with energy for a moment, has signed a $2.5 billion deal with Nigeria's state operated NNPC, I guess it's their energy company, but the name of the new firm, and we've joked a lot about how
I blogged this immediately when I first heard about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the mob always likes to name their companies really funny things. Like what kind of examples did we have in the States?
Well, White Front was a big chain of retailers that White Front, get it, that was done by a guy in the Witness Protection Program, right. And then I think there was a trucking company called Conway.
Yeah, these guys obviously the Russia, of course, you know, they are the mob, let's face it. They call their new firm Niggas, NIGAZ. I mean, does it get any better than that?
It's Niggas. Really bad.
This is horrible. This is Nigeria, okay? It's where black people live. You can't call the firm Niggas. It just doesn't sit right. It's something very wrong with that. I just died when I read that. It was too funny.
We could have brought that up before. It is pretty funny. So anyway, there's a number of other things going on besides the scam in the. By the way, there was a thing that broke in the news last. I didn't get a clip. I shall maybe run a clip on Thursday. So there's an ad that they're running in the San Francisco Bay Area, at least KPIX is, and they're running it with. I mean, they're running news about it because apparently none of the other TV stations in the Bay Area will run the ad.
Oh, is this the marijuana thing?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I have that clip. Hold on a second. Someone sent me the clip. Go ahead, set it up, and I'll look for the clip.
Well, it's just essentially some woman who's going on and on about how the legalizing marijuana would be a benefit to the economy of California because it's one of our top crops that's not being taxed, and she says she wants she thinks it should be, and let's legalize and get this over with, because by the way there is a big trend toward this. Go ahead.
Okay, here's the clip.
Sacramento says huge cuts to schools, health care, and police are inevitable due to California's budget crisis. Even our state parks could be closed. But the governor and legislature are ignoring millions of Californians who want to pay taxes. We're marijuana consumers. Instead of being treated like criminals for using a substance safer than alcohol, we want to pay our fair share. Taxes from California's marijuana industry could pay the salaries of 20,000 teachers. Isn't it time?
By the way, she just looking at her in this ad, and you'll find that in the show notes at noagenda.mevia.com.
She eats a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, she's got the munchies big time, dude. She's really not the best advocate for this. Oh, boy.
So anyway, so they made a news story out of it, and I think rightfully so. These other stations, these sleazeballs, won't run the ad. It's an advocacy ad that is reasonable. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't want to run it. If you run the T. Boone Pickens ads that say we need to use more natural gas, you should run these ads, which is just saying we need to change the law. I don't see what the big deal is, but it just annoys me because this does have to be legalized.
Yeah, so shouldn't we name and shame those stations that won't run the ads?
Yeah, we can't. KTVU wasn't mentioned. They must be embarrassed by that, but I don't know whether they're taking the ad or not. But KNTV, Channel 11, obviously a bunch of wimps. KGO, Channel 7 in San Francisco, they won't run the ad. And then there was, I think, KTTV or one. There were two other ads or two other stations outside of San Francisco and Sacramento. I think they wouldn't run the ad either. But there's no reason for
this.
They
must be owned by someone then. Well, they must be owned by some big pharma indirectly.
I don't think so. I think they've just taken it upon themselves. I honestly think it's not anything that deep. I think it's just, we can't run this because it's advocating.
For drugs. Let's put on another Budweiser ad.
Come on. Whatever the case.
Come on. Put on some beer commercials. Good old American beer commercials.
We'll do some follow-up on it.
So while all of this is happening, of course, there is...
And now, back to real news.
I guarantee you this is what will be all over the news this evening if it hasn't been on already. A 22-year-old factory worker died Wednesday after he fell into a vat of boiling chocolate at a manufacturing plant in New Jersey.
Yeah, that was one of those stories that was just, I looked at it and said, it wasn't quite even bloggable. It was just kind of funny.
No, I guarantee you it will be all, you know, all over the news. No doubt.
It's, well, it's got to be the number one. This like story's from a couple of days ago, and it's not over the all over the news yet.
Mm.
I just don't think it has legs.
Are
you getting a little sick of this Michael Jackson stuff? It's gone on too long.
Man.
Yeah. You think it's Franklin Roosevelt who died.
And now there's a bill. Hold on. There's an actual bill in... let me see if I can find this. I think this is it. Yes. House Resolution 600, the Michael Jackson bill, a tribute to an American legend and musical icon. And there's this whole list of things that he's done. Whereas Michael Jackson was not only an accomplished recording and performing artist, he was a noted humanitarian. Then there's like 30 different things he's done with dates and times when he... In fact, it even says he here's one. Whereas in December 1991, Michael's office, MJJ Productions, donated more than 200 turkey dinners to needy families in Los Angeles. Resolved that the House of Representatives, one, recognizes Michael Jackson as a global humanitarian and a noted leader in the fight against worldwide hunger and medical crises, and two, celebrates Michael Jackson as an accomplished contributor to the worlds of arts and entertainment, scientific advances in the treatment of HIV/AIDS, and global food security.
We got to find out who his PR people are. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's interesting. It comes out of Texas. Ms. Jackson Lee of Texas, for herself and Ms. Watson, submitted the following resolution, which was referred to the Committee on Foreign Affairs. Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Talk about distracting news. Meanwhile,
well, that's why it's big. That's why it's news.
Yeah, yeah, well, I know, but it's a little too big. It's distracting in itself.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
and there was this creepy picture. I took a shot of it. I should probably put it on the blog. They showed there's like Janet Jackson, LaToya, and somebody else, and Diana Ross, and they're all hanging around the little girl who is.
Yeah,
crying her eyes out,
Paris,
and they're all wearing sunglasses, and they look like they look creepy. It's like the whole group of them.
Sunglasses and sequin gloves.
It was just like, whoa.
Yeah, when you step back from it all, you're like, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, my wife has a theory.
Oh, good.
She's always believed that somewhere along the line, somebody, either Michael himself, because he seems to be into like carving himself up, or somebody in the family, or somebody, cut his nuts off when he was a little kid so his voice wouldn't change and they wouldn't lose any money in the process. And so he's actually been de-bald.
He's a eunuch. He's a eunuch.
No, a castrati.
A castrati, right.
As a young kid, because castratis were like a famous a group of
sopranos,
singers.
Right?
Well, they're beyond soprano. They could hit notes sopranos couldn't hit. A male can hit notes if they're castratis in opera that you can't. Some of these operas they can't even do anymore because there's no castratis left that can actually come out and sing the song. And his voice never changed, and he's still got that girly kind of thing. He never developed certain male characteristics, but never grew a beard. I mean, you know, it's just like his hair is still vague. And
you know what, John? That's a weird theory, man. Doesn't mean totally you have anything better to do.
Well, no, she wants to write a novel and have a character that has these things, this kind of a characteristic. But it's like his voice never did change. I mean, there's got to be some explanation for it.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm torn about talking about him because I met the guy. You know, he was really all about love, and he really did want to change the world and save it. And I think you know my theory that he was murdered, assassinated.
Well, for the weird thing was is that right after like 2 days ago they released that catalog because you know they were going to have an auction. They're going to auction off Neverland, and they pulled it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they pulled it. I have a Twitter that I sent out about this. I sent a copy of the catalog, which is kind of interesting because everybody says, did you check the date? The date is April. It's when they had the auction. No, they didn't have the auction in April. They pulled it. Somebody said, no, we're not doing the auction.
You know, I did see a headline run by on, I think, Euronews or something, one of those crawls that runs underneath the fake news. And it said something that Bertelsmann and KKR are starting a music licensing joint venture. And I found that to be, you know, KKR is famous for their management buyouts and, you know.
Privatization.
Yeah, exactly. This is the whole Barbarians at the Gate. If you've never seen that HBO movie, have a look at it. It's fabulous.
Good movie. Yeah. Good movie.
But wow,
joke,
you know.
By today's standards, by the way.
Oh, big joke. Big joke. But, no, I just thought that was interesting that they would be a part of it. And, you know, there's so much with that's basically the only thing that's left with music rights is just that, the rights to sell it to, you know, companies that want to use music as commercials and use the music in different ways other than just selling records. And, to, you know, to have that coincide. I wonder if Bertelsmann has any Michael Jackson rights.
Well, here's a question that's, you know, that maybe we should have one of our listeners, producers, answer, or unless you know. Mm-hmm. So I do a commercial, a network TV commercial for the Super Bowl, and I have a Beatles song that's owned by somebody. What do mm-hmm. I have to pay for that commercial?
Well, it's negotiable.
I figured that out, but there's got to be a ballpark figure.
It's really not that simple. When music is used, you have a sync right. So when you use music and you synchronize it up to video or film, there are certain basic levels and basic standards. Of course, there's a set amount when it's played on the radio or used as a part of theme music, for instance, on a television program. But when it's used specifically to promote a product, it's up in the air. It could be anything. It could be $10 million. You know, it could be whatever the license holder wants to ask for it. So that's a constant negotiation.
Yeah, that's fine. But what is the typical price people are paying?
I don't think there is. It's one of those big secrets. No one's going to tell you. No one's going to tell
you. You aren't, that's for sure. Well,
I don't. I know that my ex-wife used. Notice how I did that, huh? My ex-wife used a Julie London song in a commercial, and someone somehow in her company forgot to secure the rights.
Oh, whoops, God.
Whoops. Forgot to secure the rights, and they charged her 20,000 euros after the fact. And that was just for a couple of airings in Holland. You know, and these guys said, we think this is pretty fair. Boom, 20,000 euros. I mean, that was huge. So
they do it? Do you think they do it by the number of times they play it? Because if it's played
once. Oh, yes. Oh, of course. Of course.
So it's like guys who do, you know, a lot of people that act in commercials, they've made millions and millions of dollars because the commercials play over and over and you get paid for each play.
Right. But that's standardized and you get scale and you can get 2x scale or 4x scale or, you know, whatever. But that is based upon a scale and there are certain set amounts for that. But when it comes to the music now, it's huge. Hey, something popped up on Daily Kos the other day. We didn't really talk about the software programmer who had apparently stolen some code from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
So what I'm reading from this, and this is you've got to read through the whole article because there's a lot.
Horowitz and I talked about this in the lab. We just did a Dvorak Horowitz.
Oh, okay. I'll have to listen to the show. So you can probably explain a little bit about this code. Apparently allowed Goldman Sachs to see the trades other people were doing before they actually became trades, so that they could then do a counter trade and ergo help themselves make $100 million a day in computerized trading.
Nobody really knows what the code does. But
wow, is all I have to say. Wow.
But. There was a comment by somebody in a hearing discussing this code saying if this code got into the wrong hands, mm-hmm. you could manipulate the market to an extreme.
Well, yeah.
Now, of course, what it also says is that if you can manipulate the market with this code, what do you think Goldman's been doing with it?
Well, that's the whole point. Of course they've been manipulating the market.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why.
So now they think the Russian mob has it.
Watch that nigger's stock. That nigger's stock is going through the roof, everybody.
I think maybe it's pronounced Nigaz.
Fuck it. I'm saying Nigaz. Hey, okay. I got to talk about swine flu for a second because and I'm so happy I'm over here this week, as is often the case.
Is it safer over there from swine flu?
No. Hold on a second. Hi. No.
So let before you can I kind of pre-interrupt your swine, because I want to talk about swine flu too, but I'm going to take it from a different angle.
And how come you get to go first?
Because I can segue to what you're going to do.
You don't even know what I'm going to do.
Whatever it is, I'm sure the segue would. Okay, go.
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, you go. Segue.
All right. While we're doing this, I'm going to mention an interesting problem that is completely unreported. Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking about it. It's ridiculous. There is a huge dengue fever epidemic going on.
Dengue? Dengue fever?
Yeah. D-E-N-G-U-E. It's a mosquito problem. Mm-hmm. And, for example, in Sri Lanka, this is a headline from a week ago, 165 killed by dengue fever. And it's spreading all over the place. In fact, two-fifths of the world's population are at risk. Two-fifths of the world's population, 2.5 billion, are at risk right now from dengue, and people are dropping like flies.
Yeah, but you don't understand, John. That's good. I mean, so those people need to die anyway. We need to get the healthy people.
But here's what the punchline is. Because dengue is going on along the side of swine flu, right? We got 165 dead, is this and that and the other thing. Sri Lanka's, here's their report. Two more swine flu cases in Sri Lanka, bringing total to 18.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
I finally found it again. Okay, so in Gitmo, in the center of Gitmo Nation East, of course, this is a great country where it used to be that industries would test things, because this is kind of the gateway to Europe, the Netherlands. And it used to be, stuff like records, they test out a new record, see if it went well in the Netherlands, and would probably do well in the rest of Europe. And now, of course, this has become the center of, it's kind of the beta test center for all of Gitmo Nation East. And as you know, the Netherlands the government has said that they have purchased 34 million swine flu vaccine shots, which is two to the head, two for every single inhabitant of the country. About 17 million people live here. And if you've been wondering how they're going to roll this out, how they're going to make this mandatory, of course, they don't have a law yet, but I love what they're doing. Big news here, big, big news, and this is what we need to watch for in the United States. They've now started a PR campaign, the Rijksinstituut voor Volksgezondheid en Milieu. That is the government body that is in charge of health of the population and the milieu, which means the same thing, essentially, as it does in English. And by the way, it's called the Mexican flu here, not the swine flu, but the Mexican flu. They are now starting a whole media hype saying, of course, we've ordered the 34 million vaccines. We don't have it all in. It's going to be shipped in stages. It's very important now to decide which of the groups has to receive this first. We want to make sure the right people get the shot of protection first. And it's a really, really big decision. Will it be A, old people and people with respiratory and heart disease? Will it be B, the young people who are healthy, but apparently the Mexican flu kills them the quickest? Or should it be C, the healthcare workers? We're really in doubt here. We want a discussion. What's the most important group to receive the shot first? We really have to make this decision, because if we make the wrong decision, everyone could die. And I love the way they're doing this. It's a perfect rollout. You just turn it around and make everyone worried that they're not in the group that's going to get it first. It's fantastic.
It's marketing.
It's beautiful marketing.
It's like Nintendo's in charge of it.
Yeah, exactly. who does PR for Nintendo or Microsoft? I bet those guys are doing it.
Oh. It's a good stunt. I like it.
Yeah.
I admire that kind of skill.
And they've got pictures everywhere. It's a full-on PR hype. And you see how the mainstream media picks that up. It's like, will you be in the first group? Are you going to be lucky enough to be one of the people who gets the first shot? It's really, really smart. Really, really smart. Meanwhile,
maybe they won't force the vaccinations like they do in Maryland right now. Just has a law, and there was a good thing on CNN about it. It's actually quite funny to watch because CNN seems to be stooging for the big pharma, and apparently you can be thrown in jail if you don't get if you don't let your kid get a chickenpox shot. Like chickenpox,
actually thrown in jail.
Yeah. You can get thrown in jail.
Wow.
You, the parent. Maryland, it's the state.
Antwerp University in Belgium intends to start testing a new vaccine against swine flu or the Mexican flu before the summer is out. Ghent University is also taking part in the trial. Some 400 people will receive the new vaccine. Professor Van Dam.
They don't even have a vaccine. How are they ordering?
Well, hold on a second. Professor Van Dam, no relation to Claude, I guess, Jean-Claude. We are using dead vaccines. They have been tailor-made with swine flu in mind. Our intention is to see how safe they are for humans. We also want to establish whether the people undergoing the test get antibodies against the flu. We intend to comply with relevant European regulations. If this happened, they could give the green light for a massive production of the vaccine by November at the latest. Antwerp University is the only one in the world where the vaccine is being tested. The tests occur at the request of the pharmaceutical industry, no kidding, where the vaccine is being developed. New vaccines will also be tested at Ghent University, where some 100 people will take part in the trials. Well, some dead people coming up.
So I was reading something about the swine flu, and they made this point that, so far everything's mild. You know, the symptoms are mild. I wish I had the quote in front of me, but essentially one paragraph in the article, which was in the Washington Times, as a matter of fact, of all things, it said the reporter just casually said the virus is expected to become more deadly.
Oh yeah, no, this is all over the news that it's. But
wait a minute,
it's
supposed to mutate. It's supposed to mutate into a deadlier form. That's what they keep saying. Why would it do that?
Well, because
how do they know what it's going to do?
Because they know because it's engineered, obviously.
I mean, why wouldn't it mutate into a dull form that gives you this, gives you an earache? I mean, why does it have to mutate into a more deadlier form necessarily? I mean, what specifically do all flu viruses mutate into a more deadly form? Not necessarily.
No,
Very few of them do.
This is the meme that they've created a couple of memes, and one of them is that it's coming back after the summer, and it's back and it's stronger than ever. And I also, I kind of like the connection, and I'm reading some reports here in the Netherlands as well. As you know, the Gardasil, the cervical cancer drug, which of course is a farce and was not tested properly and is actually hurting young women and girls and killing some of them and paralyzing others, that the government is now saying, well, we learned a lot from the Gardasil vaccination program. We really learned that, we had to do a better job promoting this because I think, there was a huge amount of girls that did not. The discussion started. People started to get some real information, and a lot of these girls didn't show up, and they just said, "No, thank you, I'm not going to take the shot." So it seems like that into itself might have been kind of a beta test to see could we get people to take some bullshit shot that actually is going to start killing people or paralyzing them. And even though that's happening, can we still contain the whole program to have people to continue to show up and take these vaccinations? Now, if you go to there's two ways you can follow this atrocity. One is on Twitter. You go to twitter.com/flugov, FLUGOV, or go to flu.gov. And here's our fine, what's her name? Sibelius. Secretary Kathleen Sibelius. She was, she's one of those stooges that got into the administration recently. They want they're hopping on the user generated content vibe, and they have a $2,500 prize for you to create the best public service announcement for the flu shots.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services. The Obama administration is actively engaged in preparing for the coming flu season.
Ooh, the coming flu season, it's coming.
She has that same smug style the EPA woman does.
She looks like Frankenstein. In a world where swine flu kills
We're actively involved.
Particularly in light of the spread of the H1N1 virus.
Thank you. I'd like some jobs using that voice. In a world.
It's a good voice.
A world where Sibelius wants you to create user-generated PSAs.
All Americans share in the responsibility to be prepared and to inform our friends, families, and communities about flu prevention and good health. I'm excited to announce a new video contest from HHS that will tap into our nation's creativity. We want you to help us create a 15 or 30 second PSA. And I'm not talking about another boring educational video. This is your chance to be funny, dramatic, or whatever you think will make the most
positive. John, this is so for us, man. We can get $2,500.
Positive impact. I'm organizing an expert panel to evaluate submissions, and we'll present the best ones back to the public so everyone can vote for their favorite.
Cool.
The winning
what kind
PSA
of bullshit is this, a flu promotion? Who comes up with these ideas? How hard up are they to make everyone take a shot?
I love it when you get angry. Hold on, let's go.
We'll receive $2,500 in cash, wow, and will appear on national television.
Yay.
To learn more about the contest details, as well as our larger efforts to plan and prepare for the flu season.
Void where prohibited by law.
Please go to flu.gov for our HHS channel on YouTube.
Let's see. What is this, PSA?
It just makes me cringe to listen to her talk the way she talks.
Oh, this is awesome. To enter, you will need to have a YouTube account. Produced video should be posted as YouTube to YouTube as a video response to HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius' call for contest entries. For more information on how to post a video response, go to this YouTube help page.
Can you imagine? This is how dumb these people are.
Wait, John. Judging criterion. Messages and appropriateness to themes, 50%. Creativity, 30%. Entertainment value, 20%. Prize, one grand prize of $2,500 cash. Top videos will be featured on a broadcast television on government websites and will remain available on YouTube. Like, unlike the funny ones, which will be taken down.
You don't know that.
No,
I'm there's
going to
be
saying
so many ridiculous ones that are going to get posted to an extreme, because you know every clown out there who likes to do YouTube stuff, you know, everybody who wants to do a clone of Jackass, the TV show, are going to be doing joke versions of this that are going to be hilarious. There's going to be more than a few funny ones, and it's going to be an embarrassment, if not a humiliation, the whole contest.
Why don't we do our own contest and have our listeners/producers come up with the anti-flu shot PSA.
Yeah.
And we could have a grand prize of $2.50.
Well, that's kind of like what people give us.
Yeah, that's right. You want your $2 back? Win it back.
So let's think about how to do that, because we could do it and probably give more than maybe a couple $100 or something from our fund.
Yes,
and it would be better. Why not?
Let's look at FluGov on Twitter right now.
Looking at it, so it's boring.
Yeah, but it's indoctrination that I love so much.
Is this from the government?
Yeah, this is the government. Absolutely. It says right up
it's
at the
horrible
top.
This is just
profile.
Terrible.
This is the now one stop.
Our nation must coordinate with 13 counties and 4 states. Okay.
One stop access to U.S. government H1N1 avian and pandemic flu information with 482 followers. Dudes, you need to get on Twitter or something like that if you want to get your followers up.
Yeah. 483 followers, and we're 2 of them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there's 483 followers. That's hilarious. And they're only following 6. That's not right.
Have we talked about HR 1388 recently, John?
Not sure.
Well, this is a House resolution which has passed the House. This is the mandatory volunteerism bill.
Oh, right. We haven't talked. I think we talked about it about a year ago.
Yeah. So I guess this thing passed. It's the title is actually GIVE, acronym for Generations Invigorating Volunteerism and Education. And this is what will essentially enslave your children, people, this bill. And you should take a look at the show notes and read a little bit about it.
Well, explain it a little bit more than that.
Well, This was introduced to the House, and it passed by 321 to 105. It's, let me see if I want to get the relevant bits here. Okay, reading from it, H.R. 1388.
Reading from the bill.
Reading from the bill.
Is Adam Curry.
Reading from the bill. Whether a workable, fair, and reasonable mandatory service requirement for all able young people could be developed, and how such a requirement could be implemented in a manner that would strengthen the social fabric of the nation and overcome civic challenges by bringing together people from diverse economic, ethnic, and educational backgrounds. So it's a setup to mandatory volunteerism is really what this bill is.
Yeah.
It's a long-term project, but it is really in the works. And I'd like our audience to be aware of it.
Yeah, you will obey.
Okay, big news. Tuesday afternoon press release, the Food and Drug Administration announced that Michael Taylor has joined the Food and Drug Administration agency as a senior advisor to the commissioner. Guess,
Michael Taylor is. Michael Taylor. That wouldn't have anything. We actually need a jingle.
Yeah, we do need a jingle.
For, obviously.
It's another Monsanto stooge.
Yes, obviously.
So he's a former Monsanto executive, and
why don't they just turn the government over to Monsanto and be done with it?
What do you mean, why don't they? What are you talking about? So as a food czar, this guy, and by the way, look at his picture, he will be responsible for the following. He will assess the current food program challenges and opportunities, whatever the hell the food program means, identify capacity needs and regulatory priorities, develop plans for allocating fiscal year 2010 resources, develop the FDA's budget request for fiscal year 2011, and plan implementation of new food safety regulation. This is the Codex Alimentarius, which is on its way, has already been implemented in many countries.
Yeah, it's one of your themes. Yeah,
look, Google it, Codex Alimentarius. And you will see.
You will be able to eat these foods and these foods only.
Yes, indeed. It's a lot of people emailing me about that. It's, let's see, there's a couple
more.
Yeah,
that's your topic.
Here it is. From the FDA itself, their press release. Michael R. Taylor, J.D. What does J.D. mean?
Doctor of Law.
A nationally recognized food safety expert and research professor at George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services will return to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to serve as senior advisor to the commissioner. I am pleased to welcome Mike Taylor back to the FDA, Commissioner of Food and Drugs Margaret A. Hamburg, MD, said in announcing Taylor's appointment. His expertise and leadership on food safety issues will help the agency to develop and implement the prevention-based strategy we need to ensure the safety of the food we eat. Jeez.
Really?
Yeah.
We should ensure the safety of the food we eat? Well, then why do they give us this crappy food?
Hold on a second, John. What moet je doen? Yeah? Die moet je nu hebben? You're going to love this, John. Oh, this is awesome. Okay, so one of Mickey's... hold on. One of Mickey's assistants who works here, she's on some kind of medical thing that she has to drink this special kind of water. And she was out while I set up the studio, and I'm actually using her water bottle as a microphone stand.
So what? When you can't find a paper towel roll?
If you'll excuse me, I have to take it off. Hold on.
Okay, she needs the water?
She needs the water. I should believe. Oh, man. My mic stand has been ripped. Let me find something else here.
What are you doing? You're holding it in the air?
Yeah, I'm holding it in the air now. Hold on. I'll use something new here. She's looking at me like this really like Bambi-like eyes going, I don't want to interrupt you. I'm really, really sorry, but I really need to drink that special water that's in your mic stand. Holy moly. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I have a replacement. This is good. I got one or two other things. I'm kind of waiting to hear what you have.
Well, there's a couple of things. One of the things, it turns out that Monsanto makes these dead end seeds that don't
Terminator seeds.
Terminator seeds. And now there's a theory going, which means that which is breaking farmers all over the world. I mean, essentially, you know, the way farmers operate, they're not, you know, these aren't high margin operations to small farms. And, you know, you typically grow, you plant a crop and then you take part of the crop and you let it go to seed.
Right.
And then you plant those seeds the next year. And so it's kind of you can do this for a long time.
It's called, it's called farming. Yes, farming. It's been around for a while. Yeah, farming, right.
But if all the seeds, you know, that you get, you get some seeds, say you're going to plant some new crop, you buy these seeds from Monsanto, and then you go through the process, and you don't get any seeds. So you got to buy seeds again. Because these seeds, you know, they just basically don't, you can't reproduce with them, or you plant them and the whole crop fails because there's nothing going on. And, you know, this is not good for farmers.
No, which is not good for our food either. And by the way, the maker of these Terminator seeds is Monsanto.
Yeah. There's a number of companies actually that make variations. But the point is that now they're thinking that because the seeds really are neutered, the plants don't really have anything going on except for the fact they just produce some protein, that they think the pollen is affected adversely. And that may be part of the reason
for the bees. Right. Yeah, you were going to talk about that.
These bees come into this big field of, oh, look at this, and they go on.
Yum!
And
yum, yum!
And they essentially starve to death, and they never make it back to the hive, or they just can't, there's nothing for them to eat.
And of course, it was Einstein who famously said that when the bees disappear, the world will end in 4 years' time. Of which two have already passed, John.
Got two to go. But I don't know. I mean, I'm going to put together some clips and try to do it. I want to do a whole show, or at least a good part of a show on the bees. Well, there's not only the bees, but we have a number of horrible things taking place as we speak. We have the bees, which is still a problem. They think they have some of it resolved, but, you know, is not back to normal.
Right.
And there's also this thing going on with bats in the United States specifically, which started on the East Coast, which is this weird fungus that's growing around their snout. And they can't.
What are bats good for? Are bats essential to our ecosystem and our life in general?
Well, bats are really the bug eaters. You know, I mean, if you have bats in your areas where you have a lot of mosquitoes that are biting people and causing dengue, you know, bats help resolve that, because a bat eats something like its weight in mosquitoes, if you can imagine.
Jeez,
like,
that's a lot.
Daily. I mean, they just fly around and just...
Why wouldn't the eugenicists who are, of course, you know, about to give us two to the arm to kill us with this swine flu protection shot, why don't they put something into the mosquitoes? You know, that seems like...
It's funny you bring it up.
Gee, talk about a segue.
Because there is a bacteria that's been developed, and we use it in the United States for mosquito control. And we're still, Mimi ran into these stories about the Sri Lanka situation. And apparently, there's this bacteria, you just put it in all the water. And it's been around forever. And in fact, you see it sold in garden stores as it looks like a little donut. It says, throw it, you know, if you got a pond or something, you throw it in there, and it's for mosquito control. And it essentially is a bacteria that, that eats the mosquito or kills the mosquito eggs, and they can't reproduce. And it's been around for a long time, and it's the Sri Lanka articles are weird. And this is an example, by the way, for people out there who would like to support the show. We're not the only media in the world, in the United States, that is keeping the truth from its population. All the press in India and that Southern Asia area discusses the fact that the Sri Lankans are having trouble getting this product, this mosquito abatement bacteria, into the country because it's coming. They have to order it from Cuba for some unknown reason. By the way, as my wife was looking this up, she says, Cuba, they have it on Amazon.com. Why don't they just order it from them? So God. It's like they're so there's a big news story about, oh no, we can't do that because there's a problem with the Cuban. We have to ship it over from Cuba, and nobody wants to carry it on the airplanes because it's a deadly toxin, and they're going on and on and on with all this bull about this product, which is available anywhere in the United States and most of the world, but they got this phony baloney story about how it's so difficult to get it from Cuba. Hmm. And you can read these stories; they're all in the Indian and Sri Lankan press, and they never mentioned once that this stuff is white.
Available on Amazon.
Available on Amazon. So there's something up with what's going on, and some people believe that they're trying to kill off the last of the Tamils with dengue. I mean, there's something screwy going on in Sri Lanka is what the point is. That's the reason I brought it up to begin with.
I would like to recommend two books to our listeners. We haven't done this in a while, John, and I don't know how long this book has been out, but I got an email forward from Vicky Poole, one of our listeners / producers. And by the way, keep doing it, guys. Also, drop.io/dailysourcecode is a great place to upload media clips and stuff that we can use on the show. This was forwarded to Vicky by her 94-year-old uncle, Lee Iacocca, who, of course, famous for his steermanship of Chrysler Corporation, I believe.
Actually, Ford, then Chrysler.
Or Ford, then Chrysler. The book is called Where Have All the Leaders Gone? I don't know if this has been out for a while or if it's brand new. Do you have any idea, John?
Is this an Iacocca book?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty old.
Well, let me.
I think it's like 20 years old. I think I'm not sure, but I mean, I'm going to look it up now.
While you do that, allow me to read a little bit from what Lee Iacocca is saying, and I quote. Am I the only guy in this country who's fed up with what's happening? Where the hell is our outrage? We should be screaming bloody murder. We've got a gang of clueless bozos steering our ship of state right over a cliff. Yeah. We've got corporate gangsters stealing us blind, and we can't even clean up after a hurricane, much less build a hybrid car.
Okay, so this came out in 2007.
But instead of getting mad, everyone sits around and nods their heads when the politicians say, stay the course. Stay the course? You gotta be kidding. This is America, not the damn Titanic. I'll give you a soundbite. Throw all the bums out. You might think I'm getting senile, that I've gone off my rocker, and maybe I have, but someone has to speak up. I hardly recognize this country anymore. The most famous business leaders are not the innovators, but the guys in handcuffs. While we're fiddling in Iraq, the Middle East is burning, and nobody seems to know what to do. And the press is waving pom-poms instead of asking hard questions. That's not the promise of America my parents and yours traveled across the ocean for. I've had enough. How about you? I'll go a step further. You can't call yourself a patriot if you're not outraged. This is a fight I'm ready and willing to have. The biggest C is crisis. Leaders are made, not born. Leadership is forged in times of crisis. It's easy to sit there with your feet up on the desk and talk theory, or send someone else's kids off to war when you've never seen a battlefield yourself. It's another thing to lead when your world comes tumbling down. On September 11, 2001, we needed a strong leader more than any time in our history. We needed a steady hand to guide us out of the ashes. A hell of a mess, so here's where we stand. We're immersed in a bloody war with no plan for winning and no plan for leaving. We're running the biggest deficit in the history of the country. We're losing the manufacturing edge to Asia, while our once great companies are getting slaughtered by healthcare costs. Gas prices are skyrocketing, and nobody in power has a coherent energy policy. Our schools are in trouble. Our borders like sieves. The middle class is being squeezed every which way. These are times that cry out for leadership. But when you look around, you've got to ask, where have all the leaders gone? Where are the curious, creative communicators? Where are the people of character, courage, conviction, omnipotence, and common sense? I may be a sucker for alliteration, but I think you get the point. Name me a leader who has a better idea for homeland security than making us take off our shoes in airports and throw away our shampoo. We've spent billions of dollars building a huge bureaucracy, and all we know how to do is react to things that have already happened. Name me a leader who emerged from the crisis of Hurricane Katrina. Congress has yet to spend a single day evaluating the response to the hurricane or demanding accountability for the decisions that were made in the crucial hours after the storm. I could go on, John, but this is a book I have not read yet, but I need to read. This guy sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, you went to the bathroom while I was doing that?
I actually cooked a full dinner.
And the other one I would recommend, just to give you something to scoff at.
Oh, God, you're not going
to
read from it, are
no,
you?
No, I'm not. But I'll get, I'm just about finished with this book. And get ready to scoff, John. Get ready to laugh. Get ready to ridicule. I am going to recommend Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
God, no, don't read that book, yes. Ladies and gentlemen.
Read
it's
this
boring.
Book. When you it's read this boring. Book, you will recognize exactly the times that we are in, and it has some interesting solutions.
Yeah, right.
Ayn Rand, AYNRAND, was written in 1948 by a Russian woman. It's called Atlas Shrugged. And it's, you know what? It's about as long as the cap and trade bill, about 1,300 pages. Enjoy it.
Well, it's probably better written than the cap and trade bill, but that's about it.
And this is an Adam Curry recommendation.
Yeah, I will not second that. All right. So I've been trying to find something on the machine here. With no luck.
On the wireless.
You know, it's weird because, you know, my mail system is just running like a pig. It's just ridiculous.
All right, while you do that, there's a great video that is in the show notes from the EFF. I'm not a big fan of the Electronic Frontier Foundation for a number of reasons, but I do like that they're trying. I'd never heard of this, that printers these days print almost invisible yellow dots on any piece of paper.
It's not these days. This has been going on for 20 years. This has gone on since the first color laser printer. It was done at the behest of the government to prevent people from using color laser printers as counterfeiting devices, because in fact you can counterfeit money really easily with some of these high end printers.
It's what the Federal Reserve has been doing for years.
But what a lot of people don't realize, and I don't know why they just don't make this more, although I think they probably don't want people hacking it, because I think you could probably hack the whatever, there's a chip or something, whatever.
Well, I'm sure.
Every color printer of any sort has a serial number, and it's embedded in every piece of paper that's printed on that from that printer. Which, by the way, would be an interesting little twist. I haven't seen this shown on CSI, you know, but it seems like it would be a cool thing to do. Oh, look at where we can do this, and then they show it, and then, you know, that. You know, they always like to break things down. By the way, a friend of ours who's going to law school believes that the jury pool in the United States, the entire United States, is tainted by shows like CSI because of the bogus forensic crap that they put out there, making it seem as though...
Yeah, make it seem like they can actually do DNA analysis in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, he says the entire jury pool of the entire country has been tainted, which is, he thinks is a huge problem that somebody's going to have to deal with one of these days.
I will say that CSI is if you were to value that property, of course, you have CSI Vegas, you have CSI New York, you have, you know... I would think that that is probably not sustainable just on the advertising market alone and the numbers it pulls. I'm sure there's money coming in the back door on that. That property is valued at billions of dollars.
Yeah, it's amazing. Anyway, so each printer prints a series of small, you cannot see these unless you know what to look for.
Yellow dots.
Very light yellow dots across the sheet. And if you like write a poison pen letter and print it out on your printer and then send it to somebody saying, I think you should be killed in office or something like that, they will track
they
you
track
down.
You back. They can track it back. That's right. Okay, final thing from my side. Are you still on that?
I want to throw a hack out there. I just wonder. I don't know. I'm not suggesting anybody do this. But if you take and you print a blank sheet on 10 different printers, both sides of the paper, and then upside down and backwards. In other words, just shove it in one way, and then shove it in another way, and then shove it in another way, and then shove it and turn it over and shove it
and then print.
And then you do a number of other. Then take it to your friend's house and do it in their printer, and do it on 50 printers. So there's just a million little dots on there, and then print.
And then print money.
Seems like a long way to go.
So we hit upon something pretty interesting, I felt, last show, where we talked about the electromagnetic pulse weapons, EMPs for short, and how that might have actually been the fact that an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, can blow out the power grid. that may be the reason behind some of this astronomic funding as a part of the stimulus package, in fact, for the so-called smart grid, which we need to employ, apparently, in the United States. And this is not just in the States. It's happening in many other countries where infrastructure needs to be upgraded. One of our producers sent a great link to, which, of course, you'll find in the show notes, to empcommission.org, which is the commission to assess the threat to the United States from electromagnetic pulse attack. And it is just a wealth of information. This commission was set up in, I think it was like 2005 or 2006, but on the homepage, right there, the reason for this commission is to assess, one, the nature and magnitude of potential high-altitude EMP threats to the United States from all potentially hostile states or non-state actors that could have or could acquire nuclear weapons with ballistic missiles, enabling them to perform a high-altitude EMP attack against the United States within the next 15 years. Two, the vulnerability of the United States military, especially civilian systems, to an EMP attack, giving special attention to the vulnerability of the civilian infrastructure as a matter of emergency preparedness. Three, the capability of the United States to repair and recover from damage inflicted on the United States military and civilian systems by an EMP attack. And four, the feasibility and cost of hardening select military and civilian systems against EMP attack. Now, there's a number of PDFs that you can download, and I've taken the liberty of putting some of those into the show notes. It's fantastic when you read how easy it is, even on a Scud missile. Now, these are kind of like these dud things that were being shot off in the Gulf War I.
Yeah.
You could attach a little blasting device that could knock out all electrical infrastructure, even if at a very low explosion orbit. And when you read the documentation, there was some experiment called Project Starfish, which happened above Hawaii, and it blew out street lamps, it burned out transformers, and I haven't been able to find much information on it, but it sounds like that was a kind of a test that someone did to see, you know, what an EMP would do. And an EMP, making an EMP, which is kind of a... you've probably seen this in movies when there's a nuclear blast, then the radio cuts out, the car stops working. It was in so many different movies. It's for real, but you can also create an EMP in other ways. You don't necessarily need to light off a nuke.
We use these in the military a lot. In fact, if you watch the early days of the shock and awe, if you followed a good military analyst, like you would a football analyst, before they started bombing the crap out of Baghdad, they used EMPs on all the radar and other installations, including the power grid itself of the state. And they with EMPs, there are jets apparently have some little rocket that they shoot.
Right, and this is exactly what I believe has been happening with the Airbuses that have been falling out of the sky. Other pilots have seen flashes in the vicinity of these airplanes as they'd all of a sudden become completely incapacitated. The Airbus, as you know, is a fly-by-wire system. It's filled with electronics and computerized systems. The pilots are not actually in direct contact with the flight controls. And even some of the data backs it up, you know, like it was just uncontrollable and it started sending out all kinds of weird messages and it just falls out of the sky. I mean, this seems like a very plausible explanation for some of these accidents that are happening with these highly computerized flight systems.
Well, it's interesting it's definitely worth following.
And it's worth worried about.
Well, yeah, I would think if somebody's going to, you know, start planning, I mean, it might be a cheap way to cause problems. North Korea, by the way, who didn't attack us on July the 4th with a missile, now it looks like they may have, although I think this may be rigged. I think this may be something screwy about this, you know, the computerized attack that took place. over the weekend.
What was that? Tell me.
There was a variant of the My Doom virus that was sent out. It brought down most of the government websites in the United States. Mm-hmm. It took out a lot of South Korea stuff and also the Washington Post for some unknown reason. Some of these sites still haven't fully recovered from the damage, and they're trying to track it back. And they keep track. You know, they keep hinting that it was North Korea that, you know, did this for some reason. And there was some, you know, there was some discussion of them. I don't know. I think I have no idea. We have no real evidence about any of this. It's making it less and less likely for me to have my wine tasting with Kim Jong Il.
Crap.
Which is annoying.
Now it's time to panic, John. Now I'm really upset. If you can't have your wine tasting with Kim Jong Il, I mean, this sucks, dude.
Well, unless the whole thing is a scam. I mean, there's that possibility. We're out to get North Korea, let's face it. But I'm not sure what's up with it. I mean, do they have oil? I mean, what's going on with North Korea that...
This is interesting. I'm looking at this at one of these PDFs, and they talk about a nuclear high-altitude electromagnetic pulse, acronym HEMP. The HEMP is composed of three components. The first, E1, is a high-frequency, 1 megahertz to 1 gigahertz, free-field energy pulse with a rise time of a few billionths of a second. This component disrupts or damages electronic-based control systems, sensors, communication systems, computers, and similar devices. The second component is a medium-frequency pulse, similar to lightning, that follows E1 by a few millionths of a second. The E2 component is not particularly dangerous to electronics, especially those hardened against lightning, except when the E1 pulse damages surge protection circuitry first. The third component is a relatively low-frequency, 3
that's
to 30 hertz.
That's interesting. I like that.
Slower rising pulse that follows E2 by a couple thousandths of a second and creates disruptive currents in long transmission lines. The sequence of E1, John, could you please do me a favor?
Turn down
your speakers!
Why don't you get a
the sequence of E1, E2, and E3 is important because
by the way, if you stopped shouting, it wouldn't be so bad.
The sequence of E1, E2, and E3 is important because each causes damage building on the preceding pulse. The strength of HEMP depends on the design and yield of the nuclear device. However, relatively low-yield weapons can have devastating effects. For example, a 1 to 2 megaton device detonated at an altitude of 250 miles would produce a field strength of 10 to 50 kilovolts per meter, enough to produce extensive damage to electronics over the entire continental U.S.
Really?
Yeah.
So one of these bombs... shot off 250 miles in the air
is enough to blow out the whole grid.
Now 250. What is a satellite? The altitude of a satellite.
I don't know.
I don't even think it's that much.
They have a little grid here. So they have weapon, probability of use, lethal range, vulnerable targets, and potential users. Oh, I love this.
Okay, low-orbit satellites are 300 to 500 miles high. So this thing would be...
Perfect, because shoot that from a satellite. Or how about from the space station?
Oh, yeah, easy.
I love this. So they have...
Of course, it would take out the space station for sure. I think maybe that's not a good idea.
So there's... four different weapons. There's the nuclear HEMP, the HPM, the FCG, and the Verkator, or the Verkator, and probability of use. So the nuclear HEMP, probability of use is moderate, lethal range up to 1,500-mile radius, potential users, nuclear powers with ballistic missile technology, rogue states. The HPM, probability of use is low. Lethal range C notes, but potential users US, UK, Australia, Russia and Sweden. Wow.
Sweden?
What is the
what has that got to do with anything?
Those goddamn Swedes. Oh, it's HPM, high power microwaves. Would you like to hear about them?
Oh, might as well.
Well,
you're
EMP
already
is,
off, you already fell off the show with the Atlas Shrugged thing. You might as well do this.
While
now.
EMP is usually associated with nuclear weapons, it can also be generated through non-nuclear means. High-power microwave weapons encompass a class of directed energy devices, which is what melted the World Trade Centers, that emit electromagnetic energy at high frequencies. By changing the power frequency and distance to the target, HPM weapons can produce effects that range from denying the use of electrical equipment to disrupting, damaging, or destroying it. HPM weapons are in their infancy and demand a strong technology base for acquisition. That's why Sweden, I guess, because they're so technology-minded there. The biggest challenges involve building systems small enough to be tactically useful while generating sufficient power levels to affect targets from sufficient standoff range and developing ultra-wideband antennas, like HARP, for certain systems. I threw in the HARP thing myself.
Yeah, I noticed.
HPM operates predominantly in the 1 megahertz to 1 gigahertz frequency range. Oh, that's like G3. Okay, our cell phones.
Yeah, well, take the cell phones out for sure.
Well, the cell phones could actually generate.
Well, a what small pulse that can knock out your buddy's cell phone. That would be good. Too bad you can't have a little one of these things that go off in the theater.
Well, they have GSM disrupting technologies in restaurants and other places. In fact, why don't they do that? You know how there's always...
It's against the law.
Oh, is that why?
No. Yeah.
Oh, gee.
In fact, in Berkeley, it's a known fact that there's a bunch of these things in Berkeley, and you'd be driving around because people in Berkeley, they won't put any cell towers up, so the reception is horrible. And there's a bunch of these nutcases that think that it's a horrible technology, and so they have jammers. So there's a number of people in Berkeley, like probably 100, that have jammers, and then they see you on the walking around with the cell phone, they push the button, and boom, you get disconnected, and you get a loud screech into your ear.
You've really got to read this document, John. I mean, I could go on. It has stuff about North Korea in here.
All right.
It has all these different scenarios, how it could take place. Oh, on July 15th, 1996, President Bill Clinton issued Executive Order Number 13010, which identified infrastructures critical to the nation's survival. This is interesting. So they've already done a lot of work on shoring up the financial networks. Those are the first to be
Goldman
hardened.
Sachs is rock solid.
Fuck yeah. I should invest
except
in those
except for
guys.
The fact that they lost their source code. You're rock solid against a magnetic pulse, but some guy can walk out the door with your stuff.
I love it how news reports this guy, they tracked him down because he was trying to delete his bash file. Like, dude, bash file. It's like the most basic thing in a Unix system. It's like, oh man, have you heard about the bash file? Yeah, dude, like the bash file is really weird, dude.
Batch
it's like file. It's like the history list in your browser, okay? That's what the bash file is. Well, anyway, if you'd like more of this fabulous information to be put into the ether, as it were, we need your help. Because this show comes at great expense. I mean, I have to travel to Gitmo Nation East under cover of darkness to be able to get this inside information, to be able to translate reams of documentation to bring you the true agenda of the evil empire known as the government. We take personal risk of receiving two to the head and the gun in our left hand. We think that's worth something. That's your cue, John.
Well, I don't know. The point is that we try to give you guys out there, people, some angle on news stories that you're probably not going to get elsewhere. And we also, if nothing else, we should be getting paid for having to listen to C-SPAN for hours and hours. I mean, seriously, if nobody thinks that's not a lot of work, they don't know what they're talking
about. It's massive work.
I have the entire Senate hearing, on the DVR, and I'll take a few more clips off of it, but I had to listen to it, and then I have to go back and then listen to it again to get the clips. I mean, and there's other things. There was a woman that there's a really good one. I'll get some clips for next week. That this woman who just wrote a book on Afghanistan, and she's just her attitude. By the way, there's a meme going around that Pakistan is. Here's the meme, and you'd be hearing it all. You'd be hearing more and more of it. because I'm noticing it crop up. They always test market these things on C-SPAN. Well, you know, Pakistan is kind of a fake country anyway. It's not really one country. It's a lot of countries kind of into one. It could be easily broken into six countries. It could be eight countries. It could be four countries. It could be – so there's this movement to get into the public consciousness, the idea that
– Pakistan is not a real country.
Pakistan is not a real country. It's a bunch of countries. It could be easily become four countries.
Yeah, unlike the United States, which is like 50 countries.
Right, and definitely Alaska is going to be the first to go. So anyway, if you go to noagenda.com, I'm sorry, not noagenda. We don't have that. Noagenda.squarespace.com, noagenda.squarespace.com. You'll find a little box there you can check. Or dvorak.org/NA is a good place to go. And I will put a mailing address, too, for people who want to mail us stuff. And give us a donation. We need like $50 and $100 donations this week so we can
Did we get anything?
Yeah, we got some. I'll run off the list on Thursday. It was a couple of good ones. And I want to thank our web designer. And I was looking for his name.
Whose name we don't really know.
He didn't put it on. You know, he's got to put it at the bottom of the page. So anyway, his own name. I'll send him a note. And we'll compliment him profusely on Thursday.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Tom F. Lee, one of our producers, just sent me an email from the White House.
Yeah.
If you sign up to the White House email, this is the stuff we have to do. We have to read through all this crap. And he received an important message. If you sign up to the emails at whitehouse.gov, as the president's advisor on Homeland Security, I'm passing along the following message from Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Janet Napolitano. Secretary of Homeland Security, and Arnie Duncan, Secretary of Education.
Arnie Duncan, my old pal!
Who are leading the effort to prepare our nation for the following flu season. Fellow Americans, this season we're confronted with an outbreak of troubling flu virus called 2009 H1N1. It's morphed, John. It's now the 2009-H1N1. And this is from Kathleen, Janet, and Arnie.
I wonder if this is a different virus than what cropped up last year.
Well, as the fall flu season approaches, it is critical that we reinvigorate our preparedness effort across the country in order to mitigate the effects of this virus on our communities. Today, we are holding an H1N1 influenza preparedness summit in conjunction with the White House to discuss our nation's preparedness. We are working together to monitor the spread of the 2009-H1N1 and to prepare and initiate a voluntary fall vaccination program, let me reread that, and to prepare to initiate a voluntary fall vaccination program against the 2009-H1N1 flu virus, assuming we have a safe vaccine and do not see changes in the virus that would render the vaccine ineffective. But the most critical steps...
It's going to mutate, it will be ineffective.
But the most critical steps to mitigating the effects of the 2009-H1N1 won't take place in Washington. They will take place in your homes, schools, and community businesses. Taking precautions for this fall's flu season is a responsibility we all share. Visit flu.gov to make sure you are ready and learn how you can help promote public awareness. We are making every effort to have a safe and effective vaccine available for distribution as soon as possible, but our current estimate is that it won't be ready before mid-October. This makes individual prevention even more critical. Wash your hands regularly, particularly after masturbating. Take the necessary precautions to stay healthy, and if you do get sick, stay home from work or school. We are doing everything to prepare for the fall flu season and encourage all Americans to do the same. This is a shared responsibility, and now is the time to prepare. And it actually says, take care, Kathleen, Janet, and Arnie.
It does?
Yeah, it says, take care.
Kathleen, Janet, and Arnie. You're in a reading mood today.
But what else are you going to do? People are so lazy, and I'm not saying that all of our listeners are, but... most of them aren't lazy. People are just lazy. They don't want to read anymore. They don't, you know, if it's not coming in through in a 3-second sound bite, I don't know, man. Turn on Michael Jackson. I just don't know.
So anyway, so Dvorak.org/NA and to get this kind of stuff. And the fact of the matter is we do put an effort into this presentation.
Yes,
I think we come up with a lot of good stuff. I mean, I'm always surprised by some of the stuff you dig up.
Well, I do that so that we could at least be called kooks from time to time. So
we are
killed.
Kooks. And I think that there's I think people like to hear some of the stuff they don't know about dengue. There's not one person that listens to the show. When they hear the dengue story, they're going to go,
dengue, of course.
Dengue?
Dengue?
I didn't know there's any dengue action going on. By the way, dengue, I should have at least some information. By the way, if you ever in an area which is typically tropical where you get a bit by a mosquito and you get dengue, do not. It's also called hemorrhagic fever. It's very much like, it has an Ebola-like component.
Yummy.
Do not take aspirin. It will kill you.
Okay, so two things. If you get, what's it called again? Dengue?
Dengue.
If you get merengue fever, if you're eating a lemon merengue pie, do not take aspirin. It will kill you. Thank you, John. That's very good information. How do you know if you have dengue? What are the symptoms?
It's like swine flu. No, look it up. Have people, you should go out there and go into Wikipedia and look at the symptoms for dengue. It's very extreme. It's not a fun thing to get.
You can
survive it very easily, but if you take aspirin, you're going to bleed to death, essentially.
And we certainly do not recommend you stand in line for a shot of protection against the swine flu. Denise Ferguson from Montreal, Quebec, Canada writes the following. Dear Adam and John, I don't know John's email, so I'm sending this to Adam. I was listening to episode 107. Oh, I should do it like Casey Kasem. Dear Adam and John, I don't know John's email, so I'm sending it to Adam. Shut up, I'm in the middle of this fucking thing. I was listening to episode 107, and Adam was on another rant where he said that no one should get the vaccine. So if we don't get the vaccination, which I and my whole family will get, this time if the H1N1 passes for a second time, this time the people who already had it will drop dead. So because of your suggestion, you will be responsible for billions of people dying. Nice going, Adam. Love the show. Denise from Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
Yeah. Government stooge. So they're probably, I would suspect, by the way, as this goes on, that there will be a bill passed, probably by the U.S. government and probably overseas too, that will prevent us from saying anything like don't get the shot.
Are we going to adhere to that?
Yeah, because we do a legal show. But I'm just warning everybody in advance. And, you know, we've talked about it enough. We can always refer people to older versions. I don't know what they're going to do about the fact that it's already out there.
Yeah, we may get subpoenaed to take... hold on a second. We may get subpoenaed to take older versions offline, even.
That could happen. So I just want to give a warning.
Or I could just move permanently to Gitmo Nation East until they forbid it here.
Oh, that'll happen there first.
Crap. Okay. Yeah, we have to remain legal.
So help us out, folks. Dvorak.org/NA.
Coming to you from the 17th Century Canal House Crackpot Command Center, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Silicon Valley North, a place that doesn't exist yet, I'm here. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again on Sunday for another episode right here on No Agenda.